And it just turned into a really positive, pleasant bonding experience.
You are listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness, your number one resource for practical tips and insights, empowering you and your family to live well with Alzheimer's. Hello, and welcome to episode 28 of The Alzheimer's Podcast. I'm Mike Good of Togetherness. Thank you for joining me for another podcast where my goal is always to empower you to maintain a positive experience, reduce and eliminate the need for medications, and make your time together with those you care for the best it can be. Today, Christy Turner, the Dementia Sherpa, and myself will be discussing how to use the technique of addition before subtraction to help you make your interactions with others more successful. By using addition before subtraction, you can avoid potential confrontation and negative outcomes and turn these situations into enriching times together. In case you're new, Christy Turner, the Dementia Sherpa, is a regular guest on the Alzheimer's Podcast. She is a certified dementia practitioner, certified dementia care unit manager, and cognitive stimulation instructor. She has run award-winning memory care communities in assisted living and skilled nursing levels of care. Using her 16 years of experience in working with over 1,100 people living with dementia and their families, she's developed a system that helps families move from crisis management to confidence. Hello, Christy. It's great to have you here for another episode of Navigating Rough Terrain with the Dementia Sherpa.
I'm so pleased to be here. Thanks for having me back.
You're very welcome. So, Christy, in episode 26, where you shared tips to our audience on how to have a better year by changing what's not working, you introduced the concept of addition before subtraction as a way to help make interactions with others more successful. Will you please explain to our audience what you mean by that and how we can use that technique?
Absolutely. So it's one of those things that I heard fairly early on, I think, in my career. And it's, to me, amazing that it's not more widely used. I think it's just one of those solid core principles of great dementia care, and that is using addition before subtraction. And I also like that I think that's a concept that sticks in people's mind, just the they can go back and think addition before subtraction. Okay, I got this. But what it means is essentially I want to give you something before taking something away. So I'm going to add something to the situation or our interaction before trying to take something away. And if we think about how a person living with dementia, how their brain works and what's happening for them, it starts to intuitively make much more sense, right? And this is one of those things that I've talked about before where I usually say, you know, if you're brand new to this, probably don't use your intuition in a lot of situations because you'll do something you wish you hadn't done, because usually we're using reason and logic because it's worked for us for so many years, for our whole lives. Until we get into a situation where we love someone who's living with dementia and reason and logic isn't working for them anymore, because that's one of the first areas of their brain that's affected by dementia. Okay. So it makes sense that we would stop doing that. But getting back to addition before subtraction, here's a story that I think just kind of encapsulates it really well. So years ago when I was a memory director, I had this resident that was just fantastic, loved her to pieces. And she was a really talented pickpocket. but she had been a nurse during her career. And so she liked to go around with the staff and do rounds with them or just kind of follow them around because she felt like that was really where she belonged. And she was also at a part in the process where she liked shiny, jingly noisemakers and rhyming and things like that. So she was in the kind of later middle part of the process. And so she grabbed my keys right out of my pocket. Right. Oops. And there was only one way out of our memory care neighborhood, which was using a key to get out the door. So, and she wasn't necessarily putting those pieces together. Right. She just liked them because they were jingly and, you know, something to do. So I knew enough to obviously not try to grab the keys from her, but I knew that she loved coffee. So I went down to the kitchen and got her coffee, came back, handed it to her, and she said, thanks. Well, she had two hands. So she now had my keys in one hand and a cup of coffee in the other. I was like, not too bright, Christy. So I went back to the kitchen because I knew she also loved chocolate chip cookies, got her a cookie, came back. Now she had to make a choice.
Right.
And obviously the cookie was going to win. Right. I was just hoping it was cookie and coffee were going to win. Right. And they did. So she set down the keys, had cookie and coffee, and it was just fine. You know, I put the keys back in my pocket. At that particular time, again, because she was just one of those people that really got to my heart and was one of my favorites, I took it a step further. I had the ability to do that at that particular moment. So I walked with her. I just turned around. So we started walking down to the family room. We went down there. I turned on the stereo because I knew she loved to dance. And so we just started dancing.
Wow.
So it just turned it into a really pleasant experience for her. And again, this goes back to, you know, another thing that I tell people all the time, which is use your expert knowledge of your person. Because it's in all likelihood, I probably know more about dementia than the families I'm working with, but I will never know as much about their loved one as they do. They're always the expert. So when you can use that expert knowledge, you can have a great outcome like I just described, right?
I really love how you painted the picture because I could instantly imagine the person, someone trying to instantly take the keys back at it, just a reactionary, you know, those are my keys. So along with not only reaching and grabbing for those keys comes a tone and a presentation that's going to put that person into a fight mode, probably.
Right. And because a lot of times, without even thinking, we'll do it out of fear, right? Because, right. Oh, you know, so-and-so has dementia. They shouldn't have keys.
Right.
That's okay. I know this person. I know keys are really meaningless to her as keys,
right.
As something that unlocks things. And I know that she loves nothing more than cookies and coffee, you know,
and a little and, dancing.
Yeah. And I know she loves to dance.
Right.
So, and she loves to dance so much, you know, that we could say, hey, you know, Betty, show us a dance. And she'd start dancing without music. So
maybe she needs maybe she needed a tambourine or a maraca to go with that dancing.
Exactly. Exactly. And this is another thing, too, where, you know, as you alluded to, Mike, it could have turned into a very negative situation. Mm-hmm. But knowing, first of all, where she was in the process, right, so that the keys really weren't meaningful to her as an unlocking mechanism. Also knowing that if she was fishing around for something to engage her attention, she was a little bit bored. So she needed to be engaged.
Good point.
Right. So going the extra step then of, hey, you know, let's do a little dance. Let's do something that you like. And it just turned into a really positive, pleasant bonding experience.
I love that. I love that's a great story to kick off. And it really demonstrates the successful use of addition before subtraction, which I'm sure you can use in just any relationship with a spouse or a coworker. It's probably always a win-win kind of situation.
I think it really is. I don't remember who it was. It's a motivational speaker. I think I want to say Zig Ziglar, but right. I could be wrong about that. Could have been Dale Carnegie, but basically the quote is essentially you can have anything you want as long as you'll help other people get what they want first.
Right.
And I think that that's true, especially when we come to it with a heart of how can I serve you versus how can I serve you to get what I want from you? That's manipulative. But just going into a situation, let's again bring it back to dementia, where if we can get away from that task orientation that so often happens, right? And instead of seeing a person we love, a lot of times we're thinking of things that need to happen, tasks that need to happen. And it's not that we don't love that person, but we're so familiar that we kind of just go, oh yeah, of course I love them, but the shower needs to happen. And so we focus in on that. And again, this is where we can use addition before subtraction, is helping get away from that task orientation. So for example, with showering, instead of focusing on the shower needs to happen, well, what can I do for you first that is going to make it more likely that a shower is going to be appealing?
Oh, okay.
So one of the things I can do before taking off clothes is I can make sure that the bathroom is warm, because I know that people living with dementia have a busted internal thermostat, right? So they're always colder. Even if I'm hot, and that doesn't matter because it's not about me. It's about my person, right? So I want to make the bathroom nice and warm. I want to get the temperature on the water just right. I want to have a fluffy towel. I want to have soap that smells delightful. I want to have everything set up and ready. So I want to add the things to the environment that are going to make it a very pleasant experience. And if you're a person with dementia and you tell me, you know, I want to eat, you know, I don't want to take a shower, I want to eat. Well, no problem. I'm going to get you something to eat first. That's really easy. Right? What? Because again, what do I care? And I personally don't. And I also have to say, to be, you know, perfectly honest and completely fair, I've had so many thousands upon thousands of opportunities to perfect and refine and to figure out what works and what doesn't work. And, you know, as both as a professional and as a granddaughter. And for, I think most families, usually they're going through this for the first time, maybe the second time, maybe this is the second time in their family that it's happened. They just have not had the advantage of that many chances to practice, right? And to refine. And one thing I would say about dementia is it gives you so many opportunities to practice, you know, your approach and what works and what doesn't. But I also know that people typically don't have time to mess around with trial and error. Usually they just want to know, for me, just tell me what works. I'll do that, because, you know, if they need to know me, what they've been doing usually hasn't been working that well up to that point, right? But sometimes we get that tunnel vision of really thinking, you know, the shower has to happen. Like nothing else can happen. No, a meal is a really reasonable request. Maybe a walk around the block, whatever it is. You know, if we can reasonably accommodate someone, and to me, reasonable accommodation is as long as nobody gets injured in this venture, I'm all for it, right?
Sure.
It's totally fine. Let's just roll with it and take it from there. So that's another way that we can do it. And that leads me to what I think is oftentimes overlooked, which is it's perfectly okay to hang out with your person just for the sake of hanging out, right?
Sure.
Well, it's okay to have fun. And a lot of times we can really focus in on, they have a diagnosis of dementia. This is awful. Right. And it's true. They do have a diagnosis of dementia. This is not something that we want them to have. Those things are both true. And it's also true that this is a person we love. This is a person we have a relationship with. And today we're alive and we're together. So let's have fun. Let's build positive energy. Let's build positive memories for ourselves. Let's build, you know, rapport. Let's strengthen the bond.
Right. I feel that there's no doubt that the desire and the have to have fun doesn't go away. I don't know that I've met a person, whether they have dementia or not, that once you find that thing that sparks their interest and gets them engaged, that they still want to have fun too. So whether it's knocking a balloon around the class or making fart noises with the balloon, as one gentleman used to do. I had a, you know, when I was a volunteer at the adult day center, one gentleman, the little boyish side of him would come out and he would tease the girls by making some fart noises. And it was all kept within reason. He was really cool about it, but everyone had fun and joked and laughed, so.
Right, and that's another important thing to take into consideration is, where is my person in this process? Because we know that people move backwards through time, right? And so those more recent memories go away, and the longer term memories are more readily accessible, and people will often think that they are younger than they are. Right. They'll see themselves as in their maybe early 40s or 30s, 20s. And so, you know, fart jokes is a perfect example. Here's a 13-year-old boy, and that's going to be endlessly hilarious to him, right? Mm-hmm. And we all have our inner, you know, I'm 48 right now, but I definitely have my inner 4-year-old, and I always give her credit for telling me, you're done for the day, right? I'm done. I'm not having it. I need, you know, whatever it is. So that doesn't go away for people living with dementia either. But I think just adding that just spending time, that, you know, building and strengthening a bond and having fun, that's another great use of addition before subtraction, putting, you know, kind of building that bank of good positive feelings before you need to make a withdrawal to do something like a shower.
Sure.
Right.
Well, and as you mentioned, if you know your person and you share the history and the personality traits of your loved one with other care staff, then they're able to continue trying to find that thing that sparks the interest, right? Because without that, they're really left shooting in the dark, if you will. But that gives them, everyone, a jump start to find the way to spend time together better and find things that put a smile on their face.
I agree. And I think one thing that sometimes can be overlooked is, you know, the care team in a memory care community, they want to have a good day too.
Right.
Yes, it's their job, but any of us who work, we really, really like it when we have a great day at work.
Absolutely.
And so that's, you know, in whatever environment it may be. And as family members, I think sometimes we can get caught in, you know, we're pissed off about one thing or another regarding the care, you know, and I've seen it manifested as, I can't believe my mom's wearing her roommate's sweater again, to something like that, to other things of a more serious nature. And so sometimes it's difficult for us to remember to put some positive focus and energy and attention toward ways that we can help the staff be successful, because when they're successful and they're having a great day, it's pretty much guaranteed so is our loved one, right?
So true.
Yeah, energy is contagious.
Absolutely. So. Do you have other tips for the, you know, helping build that relationship with the care staff that could involve addition before subtraction?
Well, I think it's just using that same principle, right? So, for example, we could walk into the community and say, I can't believe my mom is wearing her roommate's sweater again. Don't you people ever pay attention?
Right.
That's one way. A different way could be, oh, you know, mom looks really nice today and she looks pretty happy. So can you tell me about her day? Yeah, I noticed that she's wearing her roommate's sweater again. Is that causing any problems, or do they both seem to be okay with that? Or, you know, is the other family okay? Maybe I should talk to them and find out where I can buy that sweater for her.
Right.
Because, you know, instead of making the assumption that the staff is being negligent, and I can attest to this from working in memory care, that's usually not what happens. Usually what happens is what we call unauthorized shopping. And that's, you know, hey, that's my sweater and I'm wearing it. And that's just how it goes. And the staff has to make a choice there. Mm-hmm. Do we get into an argument right? And if you've been following me for even 5 minutes, you already know I recommend never doing that. That never has a good outcome. Or do we just let it ride because everything's okay and we'll make sure everything gets back to the right owner at the end of the day?
Exactly.
And typically, you know, that's going to be the right way to go.
Right. And I like how the addition before subtraction can be a physical thing, but it can also be a way of just the communication, a verbal thing.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. Well, I know you don't want the staff to run in the other direction when they see you walk into the building.
And that happens, I'm sure.
And it does happen. And, you know, I'm not saying that families never have their reasons.
Right.
But I'm also not saying that the staff is always wrong either.
Exactly.
You know, so there's some things going on both ways. What I do know for sure is, what's the saying? You catch more flies with honey than with vinegar.
Absolutely.
And, yeah.
And we had a great episode. I had a great episode last week with Roseanne Burke where we talked about effective communication to help be a better partner with care staff. And I think that goes a long ways with improving and maintaining the care of a loved one. But it's definitely hard, but we got to remember that everybody's people are people, right? And that everyone deserves respect, and everyone wants the best thing for your loved one, I believe.
Absolutely. And it's definitely worth the effort. And I think, you know, sometimes, and this, most people are just, you know, they're good people, and sometimes they're having a bad day or they're having a stressed out, you know, episode. But one of the things that I think, dementia care partners understand, and if we put it in this context, is, you know, when your kids were little and they had a babysitter or they went to daycare, how would you interact with those folks?
Exactly.
And they go, oh, you know, that's a totally different thing. Well, right. And the reason it's a totally different thing is because these are your babies and they're vulnerable, right? You want the person caring for them to feel important and feel like they're part of the team and to be listening to the direction you're giving them and to really understand that your children are precious. Same principle with your parents or your partner. But sometimes that gets a little bit lost in translation.
True. I want to ask you an example and see how you would address it with addition before subtraction, if you don't mind.
Sure.
I often tell a story of a girl that I read her story on Facebook where they lived on more rural area, and her dad would be outside with running the chainsaw, cleaning up the yard and doing, you know, unsafe, even for me, you know, unsafe things or things that require a focus on safety, maybe we'll say. And in just the day before, she stopped him from cutting through a live electrical cord when he was trying to fix something that really didn't need to be fixed. So in those instances, when you try to stop a loved one from doing something that's so instinctual to them, such as cleaning up debris in the yard for a man that's maintained his yard for decades, what can a daughter do to use addition before subtraction to avoid the conflict that could occur if she tries to restrict him?
I have to say, Mike, this is one of those areas where I am 100% no nonsense, because we're talking about safety.
Right.
And I actually had a client who almost severed half of his hand from using, it was a buzzsaw.
Okay.
Woodworking. So a circular saw for woodworking.
Right.
And so when he got to the hospital, his joint on his pinky finger, you know, when you, joint there in your palm,
sure?
Right?
Sure.
That was very, it was just one, you know, millimeter away from being severed, right? But it was cut all the way through. And he did lose his thumb because that was the angle of the cut, right? So he cut his thumb off and they were able to sew that ring finger back on. So
I know that's a pretty extreme example. But
well, actually, I'm telling you this story because I know it's not an extreme example. Things happen.
Right, okay.
Things that people don't want to talk about actually do happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is, and where I find the big resistance is from the care partner, who says things like, I don't want to hurt their feelings, or I don't want them to be upset with me. And I totally understand that. When you love someone who is angry with you, it hurts. It's painful. At the same time, I have no doubt people love their children and will do everything in their power to stop them from running into oncoming traffic.
Right.
Period.
Right.
They don't second guess themselves. They don't say, well, I don't want her to be upset with me. You know, they stop their children from running into oncoming traffic, or right. from staying up too late, or from saying, sure, you can play with your, you know, play with the toaster in the bathtub, whatever, right? Unsafe stuff. We just understand that we're in a position to protect someone's safety. And so we have to do it. And I think sometimes we get into this weird little all or nothing loop, like talking about this man who'd cared for his yard for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Why can't he use a rake?
Right.
Sounds like he could easily use a rake. How about, I don't know, could he be planting some stuff? Could he sure. be using a spade to dig up some bushes and replant them someplace else? There are lots of other things you can do. But as far as like the getting rid of things that are dangerous, that's something that has to happen. Now, do I recommend doing it right in front of someone mm-hmm. so you can get the maximal upset out of them? No, of course not.
Right.
You know, but that stuff has to go.
Exactly.
That's it. In the same way, like with driving, right? So if I'm going to need to take somebody's car keys away, I'm not going to say, hand me your car keys, blah, 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 blah. You can't drive anymore. Don't you remember the doctor told you, da, da, da. I'm not going to make it as traumatic as possible. But what I will do is make sure, and it, you know, it depends on where someone is, you know, in the process of the condition too, but I'm going to make sure that handy rate is set up, right? So that my person can still get where she needs to go, right?
Yeah.
Still has transportation.
Right.
Isn't like, you know, all your freedom is gone. And especially those of us on the West Coast, like cars equal independence,
exactly.
right? So what am I going to do to protect independence? What am I going to do to promote that? What things, what measures am I going to put in place before the car is no longer an option, before I take the car away?
Right.
Addition before subtraction. Likewise with the man taking care of his yard, or the man I was talking about, who was my client, who almost cut off his hand because woodworking was his big thing.
Right.
Well, you know what? You can still sand.
Exactly.
Right. There are other, pre-cut pieces of wood that you can do things with. You can build things with. So look at what is the main objective. And to the man you're talking about, who probably took a lot of pride in how his home looked and how he kept it up, and it was part of a weekly routine, I'm guessing. What can we do to address those things
right.
to make sure that he still has the ability to contribute to feeling pride in the appearance of his home? Is he supervising someone now? Right? Is he retired? So he's going to tell someone. And if that means he's following the gardener around saying, I don't like how you just cut that bush, so be it.
Exactly.
That's the gardener's job now, right? He's got a supervisor on site. You know, so wait, what else can we do to make sure? Because sometimes we get really locked in on the specifics of it. Like, well, he's always mowed the yard. Okay. Or he's always done whatever. You know, at a certain point, you shouldn't be using a chainsaw.
I think in that instance, as we wrap up today's episode, I think the main, you know, one of the takeaways is, you know, when you find them doing this unsafe thing, at that point, you use this addition before subtraction technique to avoid the argument and the conflict, especially because, man, you know, we might just say, to hell with you, and we're going to run off and we start being even more safe just because of our ego. Whereas if you use the addition before subtraction, you can, you know, bring that, keep that a good, in a good relationship. And then while you have them off sanding or raking, then you remove the things that were dangerous. And maybe with the chainsaw, it's just dumping out the gasoline so the darn thing won't start.
Yeah.
With the circular saw, you're going to have to break it some other way, or, you know, hide it. But if you hide it, then he's going to be looking for it, right? So
well, no, he was in rehab because this was his dominant hand,
yeah.
actually, and we still don't know why he was using the circular saw with his non-dominant hand.
Yeah, well,
but it was his dominant hand he almost cut off, so he had to have occupational therapy, he had to have surgery. Yeah. you know, so yeah, the saws were removed while he was in rehab, but that's an, just another piece of there are consequences to a lot of these things. So if we can be proactive, and using addition before subtraction is a great way to be proactive.
Well, Christy, I want to thank you, you know, for another a great episode of Navigating Rough Terrain with the Dementia Sherpa here on the Alzheimer's Podcast. And I learned a lot, and I hope you, the listener, can take away what you learned and use the technique of addition before subtraction to help make your interactions with those you care for better. But this does conclude our conversation on addition before subtraction with Christy Turner, the Dementia Sherpa. Be sure to visit Christy's website at DementiaSherpa.com. You'll find a link to that as well as all reference resources in the show notes at togetherinthis.com/episode 28. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss an episode. Thank you and bye-bye.
Bye, everyone. Thanks so much for listening.
You've been listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness. For more information and to get the resources mentioned in this episode, visit togetherinthis.com/podcast.